I am Planta on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Fierce is a debut collection of short stories by Hannah Holborn. She joins me now to discuss the stories in this book. They are described as fresh, tough, and thoroughly addictive. They touch on many themes: underachieving adults, children who are burdened, the coming of age, forgiveness, and more. Hannah Holborn's work has appeared in Room of One's Own and Front and Center. You can find her at hannahholborn.com. The book is published by McClelland & Stewart and retails for $22.99. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program Hannah Holborn. Good morning, Ms. Holborn.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
Did you always write?
No. I've been writing for about 12 years.
Now, as a kid in school, did you find that you had an affinity for it, perhaps an appreciation of it?
Actually, I'd love to read. I've been a bookworm my whole life, but I'm also very stubborn, and so when somebody didn't appreciate my writing when I was quite young, I decided not to write anything ever again, so I didn't for years. I focused on art instead, so painting and sculptures and that type of thing.
Is the writing now your day job?
It isn't. I work full-time as a manager for a rehabilitation facility for people with acquired brain injury, and I write as much as I can.
Do you find that when you're at your day job, for example, that something comes to you and you want to write that down? Do you get that feeling? Like, are you compelled to write?
I was in the first years, but I've really learned how to turn that tap on and off when I need it. So no more sitting in the bathroom at 2 in the morning with a flashlight jotting furiously. I can write every time I sit down. I can write, and the flow just comes, which is really helpful.
Your bio says that your writing contains a unique blend of British humor, Slavic melancholy, naturalism, and First Nation sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your DNA, perhaps?
Partly DNA and partly some of my families, because I've had quite a few different families, so yeah.
And you grew up in this part of the country?
Northern Ontario, Elliott Lake, for a while. And the rest of the time, mostly in the Greater Vancouver area.
How did this book come about?
I started writing some of the stories. I think in here, We Danced Without Strings was one of my first stories I wrote. I think maybe my second story. And it was inspired by a friend with Angelman's syndrome. And I was just with him one day, and he's such a delightful man. And it just... It always has been in care his whole life, so given up at birth. And I just thought, you know, what if a family decided to keep their child? What would the struggle be, and what would the joy be? And so I wrote that story fairly quickly, and the rest just came as time went on over the years.
What's Angelman syndrome?
It's a genetic problem that results in some kind of interesting... I haven't been around it for so long, it's hard to describe, but the people who have it quite often have what looks like a permanent smile, and that's why they'd be called happy puppet children a long time ago when it was first discovered.
Like cerebral palsy?
No, they can have some, you know, fairly good use of their limbs, but they have quite often have particular interests in things like playing with plastic and water and... usually, there's quite a lot of playfulness with these people. I mean, everyone's unique, of course.
Yeah.
But there's usually nonverbal, although I don't know if that's all the time.
Like an autism?
Sort of like that, only more playful and definitely able to connect in various ways, especially with fun and that type of thing. So more able to connect, I think, than some autistic people find comfortable.
So I'm wondering how this book came about. It's a collection of short stories. Had you had a drawer full of them, and it was time to put them together, or?
Well, I was always looking at eventual publication as a book. When I did start writing, I was certainly looking at becoming an author and hopefully doing that as my life's career. So I was always looking at that, but I did want to wait until I had what I felt was a really full book. So in choosing the stories, I partly went by stories that worked well together, that maybe resonated with each other. And some thematic similarities. And some of the stories have the same characters or the same localities as well.
Did they start, like some of the stories, did they start out as a short, like was the goal to write a short story, or had you intended to perhaps write a novel?
Something well, River Rising is my first attempt at a novel, and that's the novella in the book. So, yeah, that was one of the first things I started writing at the same time that I wrote the first few stories. And I had thought I would make a novel out of it, but it turned into a novella.
Now, the title, Fierce.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the stories, too, that contains the title Fierce, right?
Yes, the Fierce with the Fierce.
Now, someone made the comment about the, like, when the book hit my desk and I saw the cover, I guess a lake or something like that. And there's is that a dinghy?
That is a life ring.
Yeah.
Without anybody in it.
Yeah, and one of the people that I was reading in the clippings, they said that someone had just drowned. Is that correct, or is that their
inference? It's kind of left up to the imagination, because nobody drowns in the book, but there is a lot of water, and there are floods, and there are times when water plays both a comforting role and a dangerous role. So that's why it's kind of a peaceful cover, as well as that just that red ring of possible danger.
One of the stories has the Yukon playing prominently in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Did you spend a lot of time there?
Not a lot, but I did live there for a short while. I did an internship up in Dawson City, and it certainly had an impact. I absolutely loved it up there.
And in terms of forming the characters, I'm always interested whenever I have authors on, how much of themselves are found in the characters. Do you find yourself in some of them, and is that by design or by accident, perhaps, if that's the case?
A little bit. There certainly would be aspects of myself in some of the characters. They're all completely their own selves, though. And some really aren't anything like me at all. I think one thing that I would have in common with all my protagonists is that we're resilient. So that is certainly a theme throughout, that each of the characters to some degree is resilient, and most of them are optimistic. So even if life has been fairly hellish for them, they're still hopeful, they're still optimistic. So that would be like me. But I love to observe human nature, and I've always worked in the nonprofit sector, and so definitely a lot of it's just come from observing humanity and delighting in it.
You talk about resilience. You mentioned earlier that you'd had a number of families growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where it comes from, the resilience?
I think so, yeah. I had some great families and some really horrible ones. And part of that is, you know, I was a resilient person. Not everybody is when they get into tough situations. Some people do crumble. And, I don't know if you can pass on resilience, but you can certainly help people develop it, that kind of thing. With the title of Fierce, you had mentioned that earlier, and the kind of fierce that is meant is that being furiously determined, so very determined people.
You can't teach that to someone, right? You can't teach determination to someone. You just obviously have it, do you?
Yeah. I think you can inspire people with it, though.
Do you find that writing for you is sort of not a therapy, because that seems trite, but an outlet of expression, perhaps?
Maybe somewhat. I certainly have explored different emotions in the writing, but more, I have a really great regard for the arts, all of the arts. And so part of it is just that I feel the arts are so important for humanity, so that we can connect with each other. And so a lot of it would be more driven from that than really self-exploration. Like, I never journal or anything like that. Don't really have that interest.
There's a story in the book entitled The Indian Act. What's that about?
The Indian Act is about a Caucasian boy who goes through the social services system. So he's a foster child at times. At other times, his mother comes and claims him back for short periods. And he ends up with a First Nations family for a while, and that's a very positive experience for him, and it's his journey through hardship to really brokenness and then to strength again.
Does it speak to the First Nations experience?
It does. I think so.
What does it say?
I'm part, only 1/16th, but when I was growing up, I thought I was a quarter, and I was in a foster home that was First Nations, and we were very involved in the First Nations culture, so the longhouse and all of the beadwork and everything, all the fun things.
You have children, do you?
I do, yeah.
And how do they look at where they come from on your side of the family, I guess? Do they think it's cool that you have, you know, you're 1/16th First Nations and the sort?
Yeah, and their grandma on my husband's side is Status too, so they've got it on both sides. When they were young, I had them registered in school so that they could participate in some of the First Nations culture, but they don't know a lot about it as far as, like, practically experiencing it, which I feel is lost to them. It's a really vibrant, beautiful culture.
And this, you mentioned the Angelman syndrome, that was part of one story. What do you think it says about the experience of being disabled or being handicapped? Do you think that as a society we're better at handling these things as we go on, or are we still are stigma still there perhaps?
I think we've improved radically. I was a caregiver for people who came out of some of our big institutions here in the Vancouver area, Woodlands, which had quite a tragic history of abuse. And those people, for the most part, were given up as babies. And what I've noticed now is that we don't hide our disabled people away or lock them away. We are a much more open society. Part of what I did for years was help people who had been isolated to reintegrate into society. And society, for the most part, is a lot more open and understanding and just more aware of the beauty of all the different ways of being. So it is a lot better. A long way to go still. We're not there, but certainly it's heading in the right direction.
The story in question, you speak to acceptance in that story, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you say?
Oh, that each person is as valuable as the next, that, you know, we're all just human equality, human worth is across the board. And whether somebody is completely nonverbal and, you know, can just bat their eyelashes, they have a full life and they're worth getting to know and worth being part of community. And also that everybody has something to offer the rest of us, so the, you know, community can benefit by everybody being involved.
You also discuss forgiveness, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you say about that?
Well, it's crucial for the person who's been injured, definitely. I think bitterness can sap everything good out of a person. Having forgiveness certainly changes the experience. It has less power over the person who forgives. And I think it can benefit the person who's the wrongdoer as well. You know, change their perspective as well.
Do you know Francis Coppola?
No, I don't, but I've benefited from Zotrope, and that's an artist community that he set up that's online years ago, and it's free of cost, and it's amazing, amazing place for people in the writing arts, and also I think they have screenplays and all kinds of things. So a lot of artists have met and developed strong bonds there and really developed their craft there too.
He's mentioned in the acknowledgments, I guess, in the back, and I just I wondered if you'd actually known him or.
Nope. He shows up every now and then on our site, but it's rare.
What writers do you enjoy reading?
I read a wide variety. Just to think of the names. I read pretty much as much Can Lit as I can. I have particularly favorite books that maybe it'll be easier for me to mention. Cloud Atlas, for example, is my absolutely favorite novel, and I reread that as often as I can. I love Michael Faber's short stories. I love D.L. Anderson Dargett's works. Lisa Moore. Just so many. Margaret Atwood, of course. But just a wide variety. Just pretty much anything that's maybe has a sense of humor to it, but also has beautiful writing and great characters.
You mentioned rereading a book as much as you can, and I do that too.
Mm.
And people think that it's silly because, you know, there's so many books that come out, why don't you just read those, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as a writer, it's obviously important to read, right?
Oh, yeah. I read 3, maybe 4 books a week.
And the rereading of certain books, what is that? Is that for comfort, or is it actually helps you in terms of practice as a writer, perhaps? Does it?
Yeah, partly that. Like Michael Faber's short stories, I find them just to be perfect. So to reread these gems, these perfect stories over and over again, it certainly teaches something, even if I'm taking it in subconsciously. With Cloud Atlas, it's the message to humanity, what it says about bondage, human bondage. That's just, every time I read it, I learn more, and, you know, so I get more from what he's saying about us as human beings, but I certainly learn more from Kraft, because he's amazing with genre and voice, and I don't like to always, like, my stories don't sound the same. I definitely have a lot of different styles, and one reviewer said, you know, different tones as well, and I hadn't thought about that, but definitely that is part of it too. So the more you read, I think just the more appreciation you have for craft and for what is beautiful and what works and what doesn't work.
Apparently you're working on a novel now, are you?
I am. Mm-hmm.
And you write, obviously, on a computer, do you?
Mm-hmm. Can't read my own writing, so.
Yeah. When will the next book come out?
It's coming along very well now, so I don't know. It's hard to say. I think I'll be done in between 4 and 6 months.
And in terms of the actual day-to-day stuff, do you write at a certain time of day? Do you write for a certain time, a period of time, I should say?
I try and set myself goals. So right now I'm setting myself a goal of a minimum of 500 words a day. And then I will do, like, some weekends I just did a two-and-a-half day from after work on a Friday till Sunday night, where I just wrote as much as I could, and I did over 10,000 words. But I'd really felt inspired going into that. So, if I don't have anything I really feel like I want to write new, I also do rewriting and research, because there's a lot of research involved. So it's pretty much always involved. And I try and work on my writing every day in the evening.
The reaction to this has been pretty good, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's been thrilling. Yeah.
And you're pleased with how it all came about, and you had a good agent, and
My dream agent. Yeah. I got my dream agent, who's the person that I sent my query letter to. I had wanted her to be my agent since I met her, I think it was 6 years before, when I'd won an award for one of my first short stories. I met her then and just knew I wanted to work with her, and she took me on right away, and it was just within days of submitting it, the collection, to McLuhan and Stewart, that they bought it. And a few weeks later, a publishing house in Italy bought it, so it's been really exciting.
And so you're published now in Italy?
It's not out yet, so I'm not sure what the release date will be.
Well, congratulations on all this, Hannah, and I appreciate you taking the time to tell us about this book.
Well, thank you. Thank you for talking with me.
It's been a pleasure. The book is called Fierce, $22.99. It's published by Emblem, I guess, which is an imprint of McClelland and Stewart. Hannah Holborn on the line. I'm Joseph Planta.